Blog Talk Radio.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-room closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Well, hello there again from this wonderful place that we are now taking our show to the third episode.
Yay, episode number 3.
So, how has your week been, my dear?
I have no idea. My week's been good.
Well, that's an excellent way to go about getting into this.
I had to really think about that for a minute. Nothing too dramatic to report this week. I got some work done on my car. Been busy doing stuff at the shop and with clients, but just, you know, kind of an ordinary week. Mm-hmm. Last night we had our goddess gathering, and we, the fourth Thursday of every month at the Milk and Honey Shop in Sebastopol, we have a workshop where we learn about a different goddess, and we did Lilith last night.
Ooh.
So that was a lot of fun. We got to work with some dark goddess energy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, pretty average week in this witch's life. How about you?
Well, I would call it probably a little bit of a high and low. I had some very interesting clients, some very interesting experiences out in the real world. I wound up nearly getting hit 3 times by people that wanted to drive on the wrong side of the road.
No.
We're not in England,
no.
Unfortunately.
No.
But, and then right now as we speak, I am pulling apart my main closet because, well, one of the rods fell apart, and you couldn't guess why it had so many clothes. And now I have to get it repaired, so my room looks like a piles and piles of clothes, which are now being gone over. So I guess I'm shedding.
Shedding.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes. So our topic is Athame.
Athame, or Athame.
Athame.
Athame, or a tame, or how do you say that word anyway?
Good point. Sharp pointy knife?
Yeah.
So, why don't you give me the lowdown on what it is that the Athame represents, or where we want to take the beginning of what it is? Mm.
Well, I mean, if we get down to just the very most basic concept here, we're talking about a knife.
True. It's true.
It's a knife that's used in ritual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if we want to go back and be all historical and dig into when this word was first used, there is reference to the word athame in the 1949 fiction novel that was written by Gerald Gardner called High Magic's Aid. And that's what the first time that specific word athame, A-T-H-A-M-E, was used, and it was in reference to a ritual blade.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually the first time the word was used, but it's not actually the first time speaking of a ritual knife was used. That's actually, we're talking, right, hundreds and hundreds of years, thousands of years.
Yes, we're talking back even past the Greek time, because mm-hmm. on the Greek vases they have pictures of women with athames or knives, as we will call them based on that time frame, and they are subduing the demons and the spirits that are on there. So you figure that's a while back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, but I know that we've had, you know, different written parts of it, you know, based on our own. It was interesting. We decided that we needed to do a little research, and we were coming together before the show and talking about how interesting this was that we have learned certain things about athames and ceremonial knives that we use, but getting some of the more fine-tuned historical facts
mm-hmm.
and really digging in was fascinating for
yeah.
both of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so many things I didn't know. And, you know, you can take things for granted sometimes, you know, especially me. If someone imparts some wisdom on me and teaches me about this ritual tool and then I use it and it works for me, great. I don't really question it, you know. So there's never been a time that I felt super impelled to dig into the history of this
mm-hmm.
object.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned so much in doing research on the history of the ritual knife or the athame. And some of the things that I discovered, and I'm actually going to share here, I'll put it in the chat window too. Oh, P.S., if you're listening, you can chat with us while the show is going on. If you're listening on Blog Talk Radio, there is a live chat. Feel free to log in and chat. Elvira and I participate in the chat as much as we can in between chatting and talking about what we're talking about. But,
exactly.
But please do. But a lot of the research I did came from a book called The Witch's Athame, which is written by Jason Mankey. And I know Jason Mankey, and he's a really great guy, but what I would say above all about him is he is an amazing historian. He is really into the roots and the history of Wicca and witchcraft and where these things came from. So the whole beginning of his book, you know, it's all about athames and ritual knives. So the whole beginning of the book is about the history and where the word athame came from, and it was really fascinating, so I highly recommend reading that book if you are interested in the history of this. But we're going to share a little bit of some of that, you know, the bullet points we'll talk about,
okay.
right? Because you had some sources that were pretty old, right?
Right. Well, I noticed that when I did some of my information gathering that obviously the concept of a ceremonial knife, athame for the word we will use right now, was brought into effect and was actually mentioned in a 1307 manuscript called Sloan Manuscript. It's one of the only surviving documentations from the witch and burning book burning time, and also in the Lansdowne Manuscript of 1207. Now, obviously, there's others that we get into in 1937, and then, there's some in 1570, but those were the oldest ones that actually had mentions of what an athame is used for
mm-hmm.
and why.
Mm-hmm. There's lots of different occult and magical books where a magical knife or a ritual knife is referred to, including the Song of Solomon. The Grimoire of Honoris, a ritual knife, is referred to. There are several Jewish grimoires that come from the 16th and 17th centuries that speak of ritual knives and what they're used for during ritual. So religions going back thousands of years, cultures across the globe, we're talking, use this as a magical system.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I noticed that we have, even in Dublin and the Ireland area, they had magazine articles in the early 1800s that talked about the use of an athame in the process of either a gathering of people that were going to go out and take care of some of the negative spirits out there, or, you know, in terms of an actual performance of a ceremony. So,
that's so cool.
I know. It's like, oh, well, it was actually mentioned outside of the 1900s in terms of the different people that we, of course, want to bring forward is that the different ones that have made it more standard for what we do here in this time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go ahead and mention some of the...
Well, what I find so interesting is also on top of all of this is where the origins of this word, because we don't really know. So there's lots of speculation on where this word may have originated from. And one of the theories that I came across was in the Key of Solomon, there is the word artave, arsame, and arsane. And it's possible, and if this I got from Jason Mankey, I want to make sure to give him credit, but he postulates that perhaps this is a mistranslation of the Latin word artavis, which means penknife, right? So, I mean, that makes some logical sense there. You know, penknife in Latin was mistranslated into French, which then became mistranslated into English.
Mm-hmm.
It happens all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
Our same is in that Key of Solomon book, and that same word also shows up in another book that was written in 1929, another French book called Witchcraft, Magic, and Alchemy by... I'm not even going to be able to pronounce his name, Guiraud de Grivy. I'm going to type that up in the chat window in just a second. So clearly this word arsame comes up over and over again in the French language, and it is in reference to a ritual knife. And there's also another theory, Idris Shah, who is a biographer who wrote about Gerald Gardner, he believes that the word arsame comes from the Arabic term al-tame, which is a translation meaning bloodletting. I'm not so sure how I feel about that one. There's not a whole lot of bloodletting happening in Wicca.
No.
But you never know. I like it. It's a cool theory. I like it. So, you know, we don't know where this word necessarily originates from, but we do know that a ritual knife comes from everywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what was your first... Athame.
Yeah.
You have a great story
okay.
about that.
So, there was a question actually about the 1307 is the year referring to the
clone
manuscript. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we put that out there.
Yes.
So, I was about 15 when I first started practicing witchcraft, and at that time, I just had books, you know. So, when I saw the word athame, I actually thought it was pronounced athame, which is how some folks pronounce it. So until I heard someone else say the word, I never would have thought, oh, yeah, that's athame. But I thought it needs to have a wooden handle. That's, you know, one of the traditional things about an athame. It has a wooden handle. And at that time, my mother, the silverware we had at home, had wooden handles. And the reality is they were plastic, but they were made to look like wood. And so I... stole a butter knife from the set in my kitchen at home from my mother's set, and I used that as my ritual knife, and I actually still have it.
Awesome.
I don't use it anymore, but it's still in my altar,
yeah.
in my altar box.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, you use what you've got.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And that's truly what a witch does.
Absolutely.
Wherever it may come. Including your mother's silver drawer.
Well, it wasn't silver, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, my first one, actually, it's kind of funny because I was about 9 years old and my family vacationed up here in the northern country up here, and we went to Guerneville,
mm-hmm.
and we went to the Bait and Tackle, and I found this really neat knife, and my parents decided that they would give it to me. It looks more like a flame, and it was sharp with a point. But it has a white handle. Not that I knew anything now. I know what we have their delineations, I guess, if you want to use them. But to me, that was a really neat knife, and it was what I wore in the sheath, and, you know, I used it out in the woods and all. And then when I got into magic, that became my consecrated athame, and it's been with me on my altar for decades now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
You know, but who knew it? 9 and 15?
Yeah.
That we would be doing things where we're grabbing stuff for future reference.
Yeah.
So with that, what other I did mention black handle, you did, and then the white handle and things. What is it that is different? mean, obviously, we have, you know, specific kinds of tools
mm-hmm.
in this. So what would be the different ones we could talk about?
You mean different ritual knives?
Yes.
Yes. Well, we have, you know, the athame, right, which we have stuck our toe into the pool of athames so far.
So far.
And traditionally, and this is very Wiccan, I think other traditions have different requirements and, you know, and requirements. I'm air quoting that word because witchcraft is so eclectic that depending on who you ask, you're going to get a different answer. But at least from a Wiccan perspective, knives are about 5 inches long, the blade. It has a black handle,
mm-hmm.
and it's a double-sided blade, right? So it has a sharp edge, although it's not really supposed to be sharp, on both sides of the blade. And the hilt, the handle is black. I mentioned that. Traditionally, it's made of metal, but they are definitely athames that are made of stone or bone or wood or even plastic, but traditionally it would be a standard metal blade. That's, you know, the basics of the athame. But then we have a bowline.
Ah, I love that name.
I do too. I think bowline is my favorite of the ritual knives because it's so dramatic looking.
I know.
You have the sickle,
yeah.
This curved blade. I believe that the word bowline comes from, again, the Key of Solomon,
uh-huh.
and it's translated from bolino, which is needle-like knife, which is hilarious because it's not needle-like at all.
No, it's kind of a sickle crescent. It doesn't exactly fit that description. But, and you know, one of the things one of my circle sisters did give us these sickle-like knives, but they were actually, they're the ones that people use to harvest the grapes. So you can have it even though it isn't exactly made in that way. And I was always fascinated because it's good for harvesting, but it isn't going to be the most appropriate one to use even for working on different things that would need to be carved or worked on,
right?
Since it has that kind of little crescent shaped process.
Right. The way I was taught about the bowline is that it comes from what we believe druids were using,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't get the reference in my notes, so I'm going to use a reference that I can't back up at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's part of our growth process.
But that there was a specific writer who was writing on the druids and supposedly witnessed this druid ritual where they were harvesting mistletoe using this curved sickle knife.
Mm-hmm.
So the belief is the bowline, the curved sickle knife, comes from the druids using
right.
this ritual blade, and that most often it is used to harvest herbs or plant life or... In Jason Mankey's book, to reference that book again, he refers to this as a tool of death. Because every time you use the bowline, you're cutting something,
you're
a plant,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
I'd never thought of the bowline as
a tool of death,
right? But it's used to cut herbs and to collect things in a magical way,
right?
The only time I ever use a sickle blade is when I'm intentionally cutting an herb that's going to be used for a magical purpose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was interesting in the chat room. Someone had mentioned iron. And iron, basically the metal iron to be used is against the fairy folk,
mm-hmm.
and it is, you know, against the spirit realm of those fairy folk. And so it's up to an individual. A lot of the ceremonial,
mm-hmm.
hermetic ceremonial athames are of that because that is they are dealing with spirit realm, and
mm-hmm.
so they tend to, you know, be in that, and forged, obviously, is part of the dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I do think that we can even consider present day, we can look at, a lot of people use, and again, it's another one of the stories, letter openers.
Oh, yeah.
Because they are very, they can be very interesting, they have like a double blade, it isn't sharp. One of the reasons why I think they don't want it sharp is not just on a spiritual level, but just think of all the people that are sitting in a circle that are covered with sharp objects. And depending on what they're, you know, where they're going, you want to be careful. But
right.
When
you bring up a point here that I think we should, like, scoot backwards a little bit in the conversation, why a knife as a ritual implement, right? Because knives, at least not even that long ago, mm-hmm. even now, people carry knives all the time, and it's not a big deal,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
You can, a knife is an inconspicuous thing. And when witchcraft, if we imagine back in the day with people, the druids or grannies in the woods doing their wart cunning or whatever, these folks who have knives, it wouldn't be odd to have someone with a knife on their belt or using a knife out in the world or having a knife on in their on their table. It was, it's totally normal. It's an object and an implement you use all the time.
Correct.
And so you can hide it in plain sight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is, which we will discuss when we come back, but then you put in the concept of the sword, which is the longer version of a knife.
Right.
And that becomes a bit more because you're dealing with, in olden times, it was a delineation of ranks. So the peasants weren't going to be out there hanging out with their swords.
Right.
It kind of made a problem in terms of, as we were talking, hiding in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
And it, again, and you're looking at small spaces where you create gatherings of people, tons of people with swords are going to be more dangerous than maybe tons of people with knives.
Right.
And I mean tons, meaning the appropriate number for a coven. But it is, again, I believe, among present-day witches, it would be a safety factor as much as it is a traumatic factor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There's also a little-known ritual knife that apparently used to be commonplace back in the 40s and 50s, especially in Wicca.
Mm-hmm.
On Wiccan altars, there was a white-handled knife called the kerfan.
Mm-hmm.
And this has sort of fallen out of use and fallen out of favor. But the athame, the black-handled knife, was for creating sacred space, and it was a ritual knife that was used for changing energy, for creating a circle. It was very much connected to that projection of energy, right? Where the kerfan was more practical.
Mm-hmm.
It was used to carve into candles the symbols for your spell, or it was used to cut the ribbon of from your binding spell, or it was used to do the practical things you needed done in your ritual, where you wouldn't want to use your athame because it was a more sacred and serious
right.
object.
Right.
And the kerfan is K-E-R-F-A-N. It was a white-handled knife.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's fallen out of favor for some reason. I think, you know, now we've become much more eclectic, and we just kind of use our athames for everything.
Well, I mean, I know that both you and I are great at and want and love our tools as much as, you know, our little various and sundry statues and all. And but it becomes a practical point of reference, and it becomes a personal relationship.
Yes.
And that is as much of a importance when it comes to a magical tool, is the personal relationship that is established between you and that tool. So if you have a lot of them, it's like having a ton of kids and giving, you know, 10 minutes of time to each one of them versus,
right.
you know, a few days of, oh, my God, you're my gorgeous little child.
Right. Yeah, you can't have a favorite child.
Not if you got 10 of them, for the sake, it becomes massive. But, yeah, I think that we're at a point, and one of the things that we will definitely talk about is the correspondences for the actual athame and the versus swords and even different things in terms of the tarot when we get back after our break. But as far as anything that we want to add right now is information that we've got is different writers basically talk about the use of the athame, and some of them are very rigid and this is what you do. One of the ones that I have a great favor for, Doreen Valente, actually talks about it as a growing process, as it's organic, it's growing, and we do these things, we have feelings for the tool we use.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that both of us feel that, and we'll be talking more about that process after the break, but do you have anything you want to add right now?
Yeah, I did want to talk about the different pronunciations of this weird word, right? So apparently, in England, it's very traditional to say athame, which makes me really stoked because that's how I pronounced it when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just naturally British. That's all that to tease. Yeah, so a Sammy is traditionally in English, or in England. In the Midwest, folks often call it the athame, and here it's athame, right? So the pronunciation is on the ath instead of the may, right? It's a slight difference. And then also you will hear folks use a tame or a same. And none of these are right. None of them are wrong. It's really however you want to pronounce it is totally okay. I think what I hear more often than not is athame, but I'm also on the West Coast, and that's how you traditionally hear it pronounced on the West Coast.
Right, without being without the accents of the other places, which they don't, we have no accent, you are aware of.
Oh, yeah, we're very bland and boring.
We're very bland.
Yeah.
But interesting enough is that some of the other cultures that do have it, of course, is you have the Tibetan knife, which actually has a tri-face handle that it works on, and it's a tri-face blade, which I found very interesting. And they also have... and I have to try and pronounce it. It's Prabhu, P-H-U-R-B-U, is the name of the magical dagger that they have.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting for me to notice. And even the Japanese have the Kris, which is kind of interesting. It's K-R-I-S, Kris.
Right.
So it is, of all cultures, it is a spiritual... implement.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, well, and just from a historical perspective, humans, these things that we are, there's evidence that 15,000 years ago humans were using knives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, there's practical purposes for a knife. You stab things and then you can eat them.
Mm-hmm.
You cut things so they fit in your mouth hole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's practical purposes for it, but it's been a tool of our evolution.
Right.
You know, so it absolutely makes sense that the part of that evolution would take it into the spiritual realm.
Exactly.
You know?
Because that is the other part of the reason that we as humans started to look at things outside of what we were, our little cubbyhole of life, whether it was our campfire or otherwise. If
right.
We had fire at that time. But obviously it is about perception. It is about the thought process. It is, you know, it takes it into another realm because you cut.
Mm-hmm.
You're cutting things on the real world.
Mm-hmm.
You do the same thing in the spirit realm.
Right.
So
right.
I think that's a really interesting way to start looking at it. One of the things I would like to share is I did wind up getting what I guess would be considered the black-handled athame. Back when I did have a store called Firewind, and that was when I first started really making the pursuit of my spiritual training, and it was a letter opener, and it's a heavy thing. I think that, truthfully, to actually open the letter was kind of ridiculous. you could throw it at somebody and take out the person, but it's called a dragon letter opener, and it's got a claw of a dragon, and my husband at the time was, he made jewelry, and he basically put a very long crystal at the very end where the dragon claw is at, and that particular one has been what I have used for ceremonial magic on a more hermetic side for years and years, but I love it, and it just is, when I was looking to bring it out so we could share here on the table, which you'll see the picture in.
Yeah, Elvira made a really great little altar space here when I first arrived with a bunch of different ritual knives and athames and then a little display of the different swords from her tarot deck. It was just so beautiful. So I took a picture, and I'll put it up in our Facebook page after the show so you can all see it. But my favorite, there's, I don't know, half a dozen knives there, but my favorite is a huge honking knife with an antler as the handle. It's so cool.
Yeah, well, that was one among several wedding gifts that came from one of several husbands, and it was basically when I went looking through all the different things that I have as knives, both kitchen knives and my athame and all the different things, mm-hmm. and so I put them all out on the table, and that was the one you gravitated to right away.
Yeah, that antler, man, I love it.
So it was, it's very, very, very dramatic.
It is, I like it. I like the drama.
That's true.
You mentioned something earlier that triggered something in my brain, and it was about sympathetic magic. That's what got triggered. So, you know, we talking about using knives for a very practical purpose and then taking it into the spiritual, right? And and we know that our ancient ancestors were doing sympathetic magic before they would go out for a hunt. So they would do this ritual where they would, someone would dress up like the buffalo or the deer or whatever, and the hunters would do this ritual where they would kill it so that they would have a successful hunt. They would enact the process before, right? The sympathetic magic of doing it so it will happen.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I imagine that the knife may have been used in a very similar way, not just for hunting, but for healing and for other purposes of dealing with what we might call etheric or auric cleansings that need to happen now. Like it seems to make sense that those things kind of feel like they go hand in hand for me. You know, I'm making this up and it's my own opinion, but it sounds cool.
Well, obviously shamanic healing. Remember the shamans and the ones that did work in going into the realms and still do.
Yeah.
Into the realms to do the healing. It wasn't just a drum and a rattle that they used. It is the knife. It is the tool to go after what is needed.
Mm-hmm.
So psychic surgery, you know, is obviously very much alive and well in practices here on this particular time frame, but it was very much very real in ancient times.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether we have a written documentation that says it went from A to B to C.
Right, we don't.
Which they don't. I mean, you know, these were all things. These were things that were taught and trained and not put in a book.
Right.
And I think our present day's need for manuscripts and things to say this is what we did tends to get in the way of a lot of what magic is about.
Right, right. And I think we're going to dig deeper into this in just a minute, but it's like there are traditions that have specific ways of doing things, and that's great. And if you're practicing in that tradition, then you should do it that way. But there is also a time for experimentation and play and trying something new and folding things together and taking some of this and some of that and seeing what happens. And that's the juice that sort of keeps witchcraft alive, you know, and being able to experiment and test and try. And, you know, even when it comes to something as silly as how you pronounce that word, athame, you know, try it on in different pronunciations. See which one feels better for you. But, you know, this tradition does it this way, this tradition does it this way, and there's room for all of those things to be true.
Right, and that's what I believe we come to is we come with sharing all this information. We talk about ourselves. We talk about what our training is, and then we give it forth in whether it's classwork that you do in workshops or we do it here in this radio show, but it's the idea of exploration.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very much a part of that. And I was saying something to someone about the fact that you have a very good organizational skill and you have a lot going in terms of how you put things together. And I am probably more like the centaur that is my sign. And I just get out and start galloping around. You do too, but I did it first. And, you know, in the sense of I go first to gallop and then I go, oh, wait a minute, maybe I better go back and find out some of the things that will make this more viable on a more intellectual level. And I find it interesting when we talk and we share as, you know, we start to go in the book of show, but beforehand, that we keep coming up with this interesting play of you do one thing and then I'm doing the other thing and then we turn around and we're opposite on another thing. But we're coming to the same point, and that's, I think, the biggest part of what makes this tradition of witchcraft so exciting and so much alive.
Yeah.
We come here and we say, I'm this and I'm that, and I'll try this and I'll try that, and move.
Yeah.
Rather than just stay.
Right.
And it's a lump on a log.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's imperative to traditions staying alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there has to be some evolution in what we do.
Real juice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And someone always told me about, you know, the be juicy. And, you know, I always wondered, you know, there are a lot of ways to look at that. But as a general point of reference, it's about, you know, being fresh and alive, because that's what fruits are. You know,
yeah.
If you have a fruit, it's juicy. We don't like a shriveled up piece of, you know, apple. We kind of go, yeah. So.
And on that note, I think we'll be right back.
Yes, we will. It sounds like our time.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30; Candela's Corner, starring Candela Cambisa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7; The Crystal Silence League Hour, hosted by John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6; In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7; The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30; The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, starring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 6 to 7; and Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7, all times Pacific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
So, what exactly are we going to talk about now?
Well, I believe we were going to dig into correspondences and what is this nice thing used for anyway? You know, we've talked about where it comes from, perhaps, and where this word may have been developed from, and the history of this being a ritual tool across the planet. But what? What do we do with it? Now that I've got a knife, now what? Who do I stab?
Oh, my goodness. We are not promoting violence. Oh, dear. Basically, it brings me to where the element or the elemental tool, as a ceremonial magician would talk about it, is as a representation. Now, obviously, in the Hermetic tradition and a lot of in the Gardnerian tradition, they talk about it as the for the fire, for the element of fire. And that obviously takes the opposing item as the wand is to go into air. And
this is saying that, you know, just to take it a step backwards, we have four elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And so there is a magical tool that is associated with each of those elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And you're referring to these specific traditions who say the athame, the knife, is fire. It's connected to the element of fire.
And that particular one, of course, will, and for me, I can see that it is one that would be the fire, the etheric fire, the fire that presents itself in terms of the energy, progressive male energy, and that the wand has a different point of reference. So, but for me, I learned it as the athame was for air, which then would change the correspondence of the wand. But I'd like you to share some of the information, because I know you started out with the information being fire.
Yes.
And I think that would be good for...
Well, you know, again, my early development came mostly from reading. You know, my first teachers were books. And a lot of the correspondences that I read were that the wand was the tool of fire, and the athame was the tool of fire, and the wand was the tool of air. And I could kind of, that made sense. You know, a knife, a sword, is an implement that is forged. It's put into the heat. It's created with heat and fire. And so that really made sense to me. And you're using it to send energy, and energy is fire, and the neurons firing and that power that you direct. And so it really made sense to me. And then when I started taking classes and I started learning from different teachers, I kept getting different answers. This teacher said it was connected to fire, this teacher said it was connected to air, and I've come to discover that it was actually Waite from the Rider-Waite tarot system who first publicized that the athame was the implement of air, which you see in the Rider-Waite deck. The Ace of Swords, which is the athame of the tarot deck, is air, and it's all about communication and clearing away the things that don't work for you, you know, using the knife as an implement of discernment. And that makes sense to me, too. So, you know, when I'm in this circle, it goes this way, and when I'm in that circle, it goes that way. And I'm actually really okay with that. I don't feel like one fits better than the other. It just kind of depends on the situation that I'm in. And I guess to a certain extent, if I'm really super honest about it, I've just kind of divorced it from the idea of the elements, you know? It's a ritual implement, and it doesn't necessarily have to fit that way. Is that blasphemous?
Oh, my. I would have to say no. I don't consider it blasphemous, but if I was with the Golden Dawn, I would. You know, they were very, very much a part of that, and I know that, you know, when we talk about specific traditions that have been brought forward and utilized, the sword, the athame, is fire.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as like the mind, it cuts away, it's intellect, it takes that process and divides it. And for me, that was what was more comfortable. And yet, when I look at what I was reading and how I was seeing this,
mm-hmm.
it made a lot of sense to actually use it as a tool for fire.
Mm.
But again, this is preference. This is what you feel.
Right.
You say, if you're in one group, it's like, what do they say? When in Rome, do as the Romans do.
Right.
That is part of it. But what you feel the most closest to is going to be what you do in your practice, in your private practice, in your spiritual practice. If you choose to go to groups that are different, you will learn to honor those differences and work with it, or you don't go.
Right.
You don't participate.
Right, right.
And, again, we go back to, again, the concept of democracy and the concept of being able to go here or do that. And if you choose to find yourself in a place where it does not have that same as you are,
right,
you either withdraw from it or you participate and, you know, in a way that honors what is going on but not necessarily denigrates the other.
Well, and I think this brings up an even bigger conversation that, you know, that we'll probably talk about in a show down the road,
mm-hmm.
but in finding a tradition. You know, you can be a solitary eclectic and borrow and take a bit from this and a bit from this, but you can also try on different traditions and go to this circle meeting and go to this open ritual and go and participate in this public gathering and see, do I like this? Does this feel good to me? Are these people that I would like to hang out with on a regular basis, you know? And so it's, you know, we're talking about athames today, but it actually brings up a much larger process. You know, if you feel convinced and certain that the athame belongs to the element of fire and anyone else who does it differently just isn't doing it in a way that makes you feel comfortable, then you definitely don't want to be in a coven where they don't do it that way.
Right.
You don't want to be connected with a tradition that doesn't make you feel comfortable, you know? So I think that these little things add up to bigger things in looking at what traditions we want to connect ourselves to and be involved with, what groups we want to practice with, who we want to commit to or initiate into,
right?
You know?
Right. And a lot of what started as a resurgence, a revitalization, a resurrection of spiritual practices became law, and then people were afraid to change and modify.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we're coming to now is another growth spurt where there are many more available traditions and
yes.
Sub-traditions,
yes.
things that have come to pass because this is what it has grown to. It reminds me of a time my father was part of the Wilhelm Reich tradition of therapy. And when he first started, of course, Reich would only teach people that were medical doctors, and that was for a lot of reasons, specifically the AMA's going after people of that particular thought pattern. But he did eventually get involved in the Orgone Institute, which is the leading one and only organization that adheres to every part of Reich's books, Wilhelm Reich's books. And at a certain point, my father decided it was too rigid. And so he proceeded to release himself from the duties that he had within the organization. And when he did move out here from New York, which is where they're based, he wound up working on what he felt was the next step, and he was then labeled Neo-Reichian.
Right.
You see, and that, I think, is where we are with Neo-Pagan.
Right, right.
In terms of that.
Right.
I see that as part of a living reference point of moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
That is off the subject a bit of the Athabe and what its correspondences are, but again, it goes back to what feels right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how you work with it.
So here's a question for you about what feels right. This came up in our conversation before the show started. To sheath or not to sheath?
I feel like we should be with the bard. Okay. Well, here's an interesting thing. I have a sheath that I have for one of my athames. And when I choose to not have it open and energetically vibrating out there, I sheath it.
Yeah.
And when I'm doing work, whether it's work that I leave it open on my altar for the work, I will let it stay out. I also think that if you're looking at it on a symbolic level, your sheath is the feminine counterpart to the athame, which is a male counter, which is the male part. And even if you're talking fire or air, those are male energies.
Right. Right. In that traditional binary,
exactly.
Yeah.
Binary point of reference.
Right. Which that binary point of reference is also one of the things that the athame is used for in ritual, which is the enacting of the great rite,
mm-hmm.
where you have the chalice that represents the feminine polarity, and you have the athame that represents the masculine polarity, and in ritual you bring those together, right?
Yes.
And
then, again, that puts us with, yes, we have masculine and feminine, and we have balances back and forth, but we have also changes in how we look at energies these days. And, you know, I know we have positive and negative, and we have delineated a certain point of reference, but,
right.
You know, we have things that go back and forth on polarities.
Right.
And we have that in our structure of our human nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we're looking at potential changes.
And we're looking at this, you know, tradition that came, that really had its birth or rebirth, however you want to look at that, in the 40s and 50s when gender was a much more rigid construct than maybe it is today, you know? And so honoring the polarity, and even that was radical, to have the masculine and the feminine be equal and have the polarity be this something that you wanted to bring into equilibrium, you know, that was pretty radical. And now it's not so radical anymore. Now, you know, gender is a whole other thing, and the concept of masculine and feminine is a little bit more loose. And some people can't even handle the binary,
mm-hmm.
you know, or choose, feel that doesn't fit in the way that they incorporate the world.
Right.
So, you know, that's another one of those concepts that has to grow and flex and change as the world grows and flex and changes, at least I think.
Well, I believe so, too, because I personally, to be a spiritual being and practice witchcraft, I look at it as being... I can only hold a fluid base. Even when I may disagree with something,
mm-hmm.
I still need to hold a fluid base to work from, because everything is changing, and we need to feel that we can at least stretch a little bit farther to take in more.
Right.
and it may not always be comfortable, and you may have certain points of reference that you disagree with. But again,
mm-hmm.
if you go just that little inch over, that's, again, the little growth part.
Right.
So,
and there's this question that's come up a couple of times in chat now, and it's the question of blood, which brings us really to the next sort of thread we wanted to talk about, which is cleansing and consecrating.
That's it.
Right. So as I was taught, once you cleanse and consecrate, and I'm using the word consecrate here as to ritually dedicate your tool as a ritual object, that that tool becomes an extension of yourself. So using blood to consecrate your tool and to bless it and make it your own, in my opinion, it's perfectly wonderful. Using your bodily fluid, using your blood, using your saliva, using menses, semen, whatever, to connect you to that tool makes it yours. However, the part of adding that much intensity and of your own energetic to the blade, to that tool, for me, now means that's mine and I don't want anyone else to touch it. It's an extension of me. It's that we have a very special relationship. And now that I've consecrated this blade and I've put my energetic into it, I don't want anyone else touching it. I wouldn't want anyone else's blood on it. I wouldn't want anyone else using it in ritual. It's mine. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about using bodily fluids to consecrate ritual objects, which really, I mean, that is a whole conversation for, it could be a whole show.
It can be.
Body fluids.
Blood and body fluids. We'll have to wait closer to Halloween for that, or Samhain.
Right, right.
Well, you know, I use breath, saliva.
Breath, yeah.
Obviously, vaginal fluids, and depending on what it is and where I'm, you know, the tool, to me, I also use very simple things: air, fire, water, and earth. You know, incense, water,
mm-hmm.
flame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, salt. So, I don't have a negative connotation to the use of using blood as a dedication or in that format. More than one time, I have cut myself on a knife and thought, "Gee, that's my blood that I just put on that knife." But for me, as a special tool,
mm-hmm.
is power.
Right.
I mean, it is power. It is just that much more. It's what makes our bodies alive is the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you do your moon rituals, we will, you know, take the water and we will use it as a way to consecrate. It is just as much using blood.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what feels comfortable and what everybody agrees on.
And I think that there are some superstitions that we should bring up when it comes to getting an athame and what you do with it once you find it. And one of the things I've heard more recently is to not buy your knives online, because there is something about picking up that object and feeling it and taking a moment and holding it in your hand and feeling whether this belongs to me or not. It's like connecting with another human being,
mm-hmm.
right? Sometimes you just look at someone and you know, we're going to be friends. There's something special here. And there's something about picking up a magical implement that should be treated with the same reverence. And so when you order something online, and I'm not saying don't do it, but there is a superstition that some folks hold that if you order it online, you don't get the opportunity to feel it, to hold it in your hand and know that it belongs to you. So that's an interesting new issue to witchcraft.
Yes, but we have the ever-present, well, most of the time, we have the ever-present return policy.
Yes, what is your reason for returning this knife tonight? Well, it didn't feel right.
I just didn't bond with it. It wasn't...
It didn't talk to me.
It didn't talk to me. Obviously, there's something that would have to be said about that, you know, in a more business-like fashion. But
yes.
I do agree with you. It's very interesting with the Internet and the dynamics that it opens up, the avenues it opens up. But I am probably, that's where we're going to see, I'm old school.
Yeah.
I want to go in and be with that tool or that chalice or whatever it is I'm doing, and it will say, yeah, baby, me, and then I'll go, and or it'll be like, nah, we don't make it. So those things are important. So I can understand why, especially when you're talking about ceremonial things. But how many people, I mean, how many church people go to the Catholic store that basically handles the chalices and everything and picks out the exact one? They probably just order it and say, here, send this to me via the mail.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, there's that, but I'm more personal.
The other superstition I've heard is you should not haggle over price. It's considered unlucky when you haggle over the price of a magical object. So, you know, take that as you will, right?
Right.
So now you've gone into some witchy magical shop or a hunting shop or whatever, and you found the knife that, or a pawn shop, whatever, and you found the knife that you just love, and you don't haggle, you just pay the price, and you bring it home, and now what, right? So you want to take it from this mundane object into a magical object. So the first thing I was taught was you have to cleanse it and get rid of whatever stuff, energetic or otherwise, that was on it before. And something that I think is super simple is to put it in the earth, to just drive it into the earth, and you can leave it there for a moon cycle, so from full moon to full moon, and allow whatever energy was on there to be absorbed away. And, you know, there's some practical things for this. If your weapon, if your sword, if your knife, if your athame is metal, right, you don't want to put it in a particularly wet part of the earth, you know, that could cause some damage to it. You can also run it through the elements, you know, creating a ritual for yourself, touching it to earth, having a bowl of dirt or salt, running it through burning incense or sage smoke, running it through water that's been blessed, running it through the flame of a candle, and putting it through each of the elements in order to have a cleansing process, right?
Right, right. And also, with regard to that, it becomes your tool, it becomes sacred, and you can add, instead of just water, it can be a special brew that you use that is specifically made, which again goes back to a more hermetic tradition of making a specific kind of cleansing brew, and again, using blood.
Right.
Okay. So one of the things that at this point, before we start to wind down, is there anything that you want to do as a closing? Because there is something I need to do as an announcement.
Sure. Well, the only thing I want to just add, you know, in there, we do the cleansing, and then we speak out loud, this is my ritual knife. And maybe you give it a name, or maybe you hold it up for the gods or the moon or whatever to see. But, you know, you do the cleansing, and then you bless it. And you can bless it in whatever way feels appropriate to you. But, you know, now you have this special blade that can be used in your rituals. It can be used to cut away ties. It can be used as a pendulum. And now you have this beautiful, magical athame.
Mm. Oh, wonderful. Well, I think at this point, before we do a real closure, and I know it's coming fast, is I need to mention that we have the Mystic Fair that is here in the Santa Rosa area. It will be at the Santa Rosa Veterans Memorial. It'll be October 15th and 16th of this year, and it will be from 10 to 5. I will be there as a reader, and I believe you've got a booth.
Yeah, Milk and Honey will be there, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I think I'm going to drag a henna artist along with me.
Ooh, henna, great. This is important. So that is something I want to bring up and have people come in.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Take care. See you next week.
Isis next week.
The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.